This is the second James today. And like the other one, he has a nickname also, and his name's just Jim. And as I think back perhaps a couple of weeks ago, inadvertently my wife mentioned to me the fact that there had been a phone call to our house that I didn't receive, and that tonight was my hour of decision. And I must confess that if I'd gotten that call, I would have probably said something to the fact, but there's Glenn and there's Brother Sheldon and Brother Alvin and a whole bunch of others of you out there that could do a much better job than myself this evening. But when the Master calls, we must answer. I want to talk to you about a very delightful subject this evening. Perhaps after a while you're going to wonder whether it's so delightful or not. I'll begin in 2 Nephi, and you'll guess the subject shortly. The first chapter. And I'll begin with the 114th verse. But behold, all things have been done in the wisdom of him who knoweth all things. Adam fell that men might be, and men are that they might have joy. There's a number of different kinds of joy. And perhaps I could solicit some help and ask someone to give me their thought of what the greatest joy in life might be. Does anyone want to venture a guess? Everybody's afraid. Am I the only one that's not afraid? I guarantee you, I fear also. Glenn? Undoubtedly, that's the greatest joy. I had in mind another one, but that is the greatest joy in life, when you know that you have done the commandments of our Lord. And indirectly, no, directly, this other item that I was thinking of is following a commandment of the Lord. 1 Perhaps as I look around the crowd, almost all of you, except for our young, have either been a direct participant or close by when a young one was born. Now, whether it be an animal or, in my mind, I was thinking of one of our own, there's always a joy in your heart that you can't describe any other way. When you see a mother travail and then deliver, and then see her great joy. You know, that little urchin, he's not so pretty at that moment, or she. And yet the mother caresses his forehead and kisses him, holds him closely. You know, and Dad's jumping around the camera. He's taking pictures because he's so thrilled with that little one that's come into his life. I'm about to knock everything off the podium here. I'm sorry. But they're both just tickled to death with that new life that has just been born. And nowadays, within a very short few hours, you take him home with you. And there you prepare a room for him. Or at least a place within a room for him. You know, just the right bedding and just the right outfits. And You wake frequently to feed and to change. You think nothing of it. And by, that little one begins to grow. You know, people come to see him, and Dad says, "Look how he's grown." And that person doesn't see any change. You know, he hasn't grown maybe an eighth of an inch. You can't see it. But Mom and Dad notice it, and they're full of joy. And he gets a little older, and he begins to crawl. And he gets into the cupboards, and we're hollering, "Johnny, get out of there. Lisa, leave that alone. Stephen, don't you know better than that?" And the names go on, and the scolding continues, and they grow. The next thing you know, you find them on top of the piano. Not on the keyboard, but clear up on top. There's an interesting picture up there that they can't quite see well enough from the ground or floor. And we begin to scold them even more. And they hang their head. You know, and we're so upset because, well, they nearly killed themselves, you know? And we want them to look into our eye and hear our words. But they hang their head. Tis the nature of us all to scold, to warn, to chastise. They grow a little older, and they, to begin with, they're perhaps willing to go off to school, and there comes a day when they're not quite so willing to go. You know, you got to get them up. Maybe you have to scold them because they want to play sick on you. That never happened in our home, though. They get a little older. You know, past those formative years, as it's sometimes called, and they've moved into their adolescence, and lo and behold, they've got a driver's license. Perhaps they're bigger than you already. We feed them well. No, they want to borrow the car. And of course, our first question is your homework done, and where are you going? And when will you be home? And no, that's not early enough. We begin to give them instructions once more. As I think back, as I raised my four, and some of them are not raised yet, I remember my sternness. I remember my fits of rage. And I hang my head. And you'll understand in a few minutes. Perhaps it would be well if we backed up just a little bit here. And find out why Jessica is in our home. Or why Timothy's there. And didn't take too much reading to find out why he's there. For as I look into Genesis in the first chapter, even before Adam and Eve were sent from the garden for their misdeeds, God had a plan. And in that 28th verse it says, "And God blessed them, and God said unto them, Be fruitful, and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over everything that moveth upon the earth." And we've been successful from two parents. The world grew to the point that it went into iniquity so great that God swept it off with the great flood. And from 8 souls who were saved, we have subdued it to the point that there are billions of us who walk this face of the earth, and ironically, not one of us alike. And as a side issue, when I think of that, I think of a mighty God and a marvelous God to create something so fantastic as this universe, when there is not two of anything alike. Let's go back to our children. No, they've caused us grief, we think. And here they're nearly to the age of being on their own. And I hear it said so often, "I'll just be glad when they're out of the house." I have 2 out of the house now. And I wish they were back. But they bring me joy with their lives. And life must continue. But just as that time comes when they have nearly, in their minds at least, learned all the tricks of the trade, we begin to wonder, where was all the joy? If their joy has disappeared, there is but one reason. And again, that's something I'll come back to. I struggle with my words because it is a subject that is easy to offend with. And my desires are not to offend anyone. But if anything, that when we depart, perhaps your level of frustration will have diminished a little. You will have an understanding of the things that you do a little bit better. And maybe, I hope, our children will understand where mom and dad are coming from when they talk to them. I am not a great communicator, and neither are most of you, and I'm not judging you when I say that. But oftentimes when our children come to us with questions, we were without words to answer. And we tell them, "Well, just because..." And They're not dumb. They know Dad's got a reason. But for the life of them, they don't know what it is because he didn't tell them. I'm puzzled which scripture to read next. I have flipped to one and I will read it. And we hope it was for the best. The Lord sent us many examples. And we have had many men go before us who were great and mighty in spirit. And I marvel in their antiquity how they understood human nature so well. And that even through many translations, and I forget how many it's been, seems like it's over in excess of 100. Yet through this Bible, yes, in the Book of Mormon as well, a pure understanding of what God's will for us comes through very clear. If you turn to Ephesians in the 6th chapter, he began very abruptly. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Should we stop there? If I were to stop there, that would be just as when your father told you, well, that's the way it is. He went on. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and that thou may live long on the earth. You can look around you today and see many who do not care how long they live. They carry a gun in their pocket, and they're willing to use it randomly. They don't have to be angry at you. You just have to be in their presence. I don't know how many of you were in town last Thursday when this very thing happened in North Kansas City. When a seemingly mentally strong young man of about the age of 15 or so decided he didn't need his mother anymore. I don't know where the honor went, but I'm sure there was a reason. For in the 4th verse he says, and ye fathers, and I would add, if you'll give me the privilege, ye mothers. For in this day and time I see that our mothers oftentimes wear almost the same shoes as our fathers because they're off to work and they're not with us. And they become short-tempered as well with the little time that they have with us as children. It says, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Was that young man nurtured? Was he admonished of the commandments of the Lord? I wonder if he even had heard of the Ten Commandments. If he did, he did not take much stock in them. And I told you a moment ago that I hung my head in shame. Because of my wrath at times with my children. Because of this fourth verse, where it says that they brought them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. I do not recall a time that my Lord was ever wroth with me. Yes, he rebuked me through his words here in the scriptures. He brought me to my knees many times. But never was he wroth. If I am to use him for my example with you, my friends, with my children at home, with your children, there cannot be anger, but rather admonition from the Lord. Teach them his words. Explain them with simplicity. Pardon me. If we turn to Deuteronomy in the sixth chapter, I'll read you a few words from the Old Testament. And in reading them, reminds you that in the scriptures it says that God is the same today, yesterday, and forever. And if this was his commandments to the children of Israel, then it must also be his commandments to you and I. I'll start with the fourth verse. Hear ye, O Israel, the Lord our God is one, the Lord our God is one Lord. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart. He's talking to us there, right? We're to have his words written in our heart. But he didn't stop there. He continued and he says, thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thy house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and thou shalt be as a frontlet before thine eyes. You know, if you can't remember these things, put them on the cap of bill of your cap. Write them in the palm of your hand. But remember them. Thou shalt write them upon the post of thy house and upon thy gates. I have a gate at home with many slats on it. And a thought has just occurred to me. Maybe I should go home tonight and get a white paintbrush out. And write peace on one. Joy on another. Long-suffering, patience, gentleness and kindness, goodness. Yes, and love. And then remember to come through the front door each night, so that I can look at those before I see my family. And remember that they need those desperately. He goes on with words that's more particular to the house of Israel, but I'll read a few of them anyway. He says, "And it shall be when the Lord thy God shall have brought thee into the land which he sware unto thee, thy fathers, to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob, to give thee, great and goodly cities which thou buildest not, and houses full of good things which thou filledest not, and wells digged which thou diggest not, and vineyards and olive trees which thou plantest not. When thou shalt have eaten and be filled, then beware lest thou forget the Lord which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage." And as I read those words, I realize that we live in a land of promise. And I did not have to work very hard for my home. And I don't work so terribly hard to feed my family. But what I have time and energy left for pleasure. And so I'm not very different than the house of Israel here. For my house is full. There's plenty of water in the tap. And my belly is full thanks to our good cooks downstairs. And so it is easy for me to forget that all of these are given me by a merciful God. Remember, I said that earlier that we're to use our master as our example. Here again, he's given us an example. He's been merciful to us. And I wonder, what kind of mercy do we show our children? And kids, let me warn you before we're through here tonight. You think I'm being hard on your mom and dad, just wait. He gives them more commandments to your parents of what they must teach you. In the 13th verse, he says, "Thou shalt fear the Lord thy God and serve him, and shalt swear by his name. Ye shall not go after other gods, other gods of the people which are around about you." And they have many gods around you. Perhaps you have not heard of them, but there are many. Yes, there are people within this land that would serve idols. Who would serve Satan himself, who serve their own lusts, their own pleasures. There is but one God that we shall serve, and he is the Lord. For the Lord thy God is a jealous God among you. Lest the anger of the Lord thy God be kindled against thee and destroy thee from off the face of the earth, ye shall not tempt the Lord your God as ye tempted him in Massah. We in this area have seen great devastation in the last month and a half, when the Missouri River has gone from something not even a mile wide to in locations in excess of 18 miles across. I have seen some of that damage that it created, and it is devastating. When highways can be ripped up like a piece of ribbon floating down a stream, and great gouges of earth that are no more. And I would submit to you that these things have happened because of iniquity. just as disease that is upon this nation and continues to grow is iniquity, or the result of it. But he does hold us out promise, and I shall read about it soon. And thou shalt do that which is right and good in the sight of the Lord, that it may be well with thee, that thou mayest go in and possess the good land which the Lord swore unto thy fathers, to cast out all thy enemies from before thee, as the Lord has spoken. And when thy son asketh thee in time to come, saying, What mean the testimonies and the statutes and judgments which the Lord our God hath commanded you? Then thou shalt say unto thy son, We were Pharaoh's bondmen in Egypt, and the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. He has drawn us out of the world with a mighty hand. I listened to a dear brother of mine just last night, and his wife. Marvel that they no longer walk in darkness. But they had the love of you and your fellowship. And they were so grateful. And he just hopes that he can tell his kids this, can explain it to them, that they will remember. And the Lord showed signs and wonders great and sore upon Egypt, upon Pharaoh, and upon all his household before our eyes. And he brought us out from thence, that he might bring us in to give us the land which he sware unto our fathers. And the Lord commanded us to do all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God, for our God good always, that he might preserve us alive as it is at this day. And it shall be our righteousness if we observe to do all these commandments before the Lord our God, as he hath commanded us. We are commanded to teach our children these things. Now, and he didn't stop in that sixth chapter, but he continued on in the seventh chapter, and I would invite you to read there. There's little bits and pieces of things that he commanded us to teach our families, to admonish them about. Yes, and I will read you one of them in the seventh chapter. Speaking of those of the world, for us at least, for them it was like the Hittites and the Havites and the variousites that they went in to possess their lands. But he said, You shall destroy their altars and break down their images and cut down their groves and burn their graven images with fire. And it goes on to say, because we are a chosen people by our God. That chosen is sometimes misunderstood. No, he didn't just choose us just as we are. He put out his hand to us and invited us to come to him. And if we chose him, he chose us. And in this day and time, I realize that we can't go into our neighbor's yard and destroy his image of Mary that sits there on a pedestal. But we can certainly sit down and teach our children what the scriptures say about that image over there. The fact that that image over there represents nothing. The fact that Christ was born of Mary, not of that image. And that she was just a woman of great virtue. And I hate to use that word just because it doesn't satisfy my mind. For she was blessed of all women. But it is our duty and our responsibility to nurture our children, to raise them up to the Lord. For those of you who were here last Wednesday night, bear with me. For I could not resist the temptation to read the third chapter of Colossians. For here are other things that we are to teach our children. And I read from here to show you that Christ did not change. Or rather, I should say God, for Christ brought his words to us from the Old Testament into the New. For he gave them the same commandments. Maybe not worded exactly the like, but they are the same. They have the same meaning. Perhaps in the New Testament with greater depth. If ye then be with Christ, I'm reading from the third chapter in the beginning of the first verse, seek those things which are above, which Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not things on the earth. For ye are dead, and your life is hid with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then ye also appear with him in glory. Mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affections, evil concupiscence, covetousness, which is idolatry, for which things sake the wrath of God cometh on the children of disobedience, in the which ye also walked sometimes when ye lived in them. But now ye also put off all these. Now we're going to put off not only these horrible things that he mentioned before, but now ye also put off all these, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth. Lie not one to another. See that ye have put off the old man with his deeds, and have put on the new man, which is renewed in the knowledge and image of him that created him. Where there is neither Greek nor Jew, circumcision or uncircumcision, barbarian or Scythian, bond or free, but Christ is all and in all. Put on, therefore, as the elect of God, these are the things to put into your life: holy and beloved bowels of mercy, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering, forbearing one another and forgiving one another. If any man have a quarrel against any, even as Christ forgave you, so also do ye. And I see there that he told me that I was to be kind and humble and meek and long-suffering and forbearing and forgiving. And as I look back within my life, I realize that those things were not always there, and that I struggle with them yet today. And as I am, these are the things that my children see. And as they see me, so they become. And if I would that they would be meek and long-suffering, quick to forgive their friends, always kind, I will not teach them those things by shaking my finger in their face and scolding them. I may admonish them of those things, but I will only teach them those things by my life and how I live it. So if you look out on the playground and you see there what you would not like to see, look within. For I will be doing the same. I promised you, children, that I would not leave you alone tonight, for God also gave you commandments. And for those of you who would like to follow along, I managed to mark a wrong, got all my markers in the wrong place. To Proverbs. In the 13th chapter of Proverbs, I'm going to read only a couple of verses. And I want to preface these words with some thoughts of my own. The fact that as I read Proverbs, there's something like those words that we hear from, and sometimes they're kind of cute, that come from Confucius say. I often think of them that way. Because they're very short and very concise, but they make a very definite point. And you can remember them easily. So children, if you don't want your father's wrath, you would rather have his love, listen and heed. A wise son heareth his father's instruction, but a scorner heareth not rebuke. Perhaps he should not, but when he shakes his finger at you, listen up. He may not be able to use exactly the right words, but he's trying to get a message across to you. And if you honestly don't understand what he's saying to you, with all kindness, say, Dad, I don't understand. Explain. Put it in words that I can understand. Dads, please do it for him. I heard down in the kitchen today a reminder of a sermon some years ago that our brother from Arizona spoke to us when he explained taking his son out to do some target practice, I believe it was, and he had instructed him that he should never point that barrel at anybody. You never point a barrel at anyone because that gun's loaded. Understand, Dad, understand. And his dad went off to do something else after a few minutes of instruction because they were out there by themselves, and so, you know, there was no one going to get hurt. He turns around to see this gun pointed directly at him. He says, Son, didn't I tell you not to point that gun at me? Pardon me for yelling. I'm sorry. The little boy hung his head. I probably woke somebody up. I'm sorry. Go back to sleep. The gun was put in the car, and the little boy was disappointed because he didn't get to do any target practicing at all. But on his own, he very quietly said, Dad, what's the barrel? You know, we all think that we can talk to the level that they understand. They have not experienced all the things that you have experienced. Same was true when I was in the service. You know, They took us in and they broke down a rifle and they explained each and every little piece of that machine to us. What it did and how it worked and how we were to care for it. And the sergeant that was teaching us, he said, "Now you farm boys, you understand that this is ridiculous, don't you?" He says, "But these guys from New York, they need to know this. They have not had that experience. Our children have not lived 40 years. They do not have all the experiences that we have. Share them in the greatest of detail." If you turn to the 24th verse of that same chapter, he says, and before I read this, let me preface it also by saying that he has already given us instruction that we're to be kind and merciful and gentle. So kids, if this happens, realize that you must have not paid heed. For it says, "He that spareth his rod hateth his son. But he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes." If I understand the old English here, he is telling us that a father has chastened you many times before he finally gives up and uses that rod. Or a mother likewise. She knows that you understand, but for some reason your hearing wasn't in your ear. It was elsewhere. And they're trying to get that attention. If we go to the 22nd chapter and the 15th verse, there's another short verse that I would like to read. And it's true. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, you know, and even us adults sometimes are somewhat foolish. We don't always think before we act. But the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. You know, when you're hurting, you remember that it was not wise. And you can go back and apply the first verse where he told us to be wise, and we would not have to be chastened. Or not the first verse of this chapter, but the first of 13th chapter. Perhaps you'd like to turn with me very quickly to the 23rd chapter. Starting with the 12th verse, he says, "The eyes of the Lord preserve knowledge, and he overthroweth the words of the transgressor. Slothful men saith, there is a lion without, and I shall be slain in the streets." These are all words that show a lack of wisdom. And perhaps they're not all necessary to be read, but I will read them for my profit and learning. I've read them once already, but I forget so quickly. He goes on to say, "The mouth of a strange woman is a deep pit, and he that is behoved of the Lord shall fall therein. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child." Pardon me, I've slipped into the wrong chapter. No wonder things didn't seem quite right. If I do get to the 23rd chapter, which I finally have, it says, "Apply thine heart unto instruction, and thine ear to the words of knowledge." And he goes on to say, "Withhold not correction from thy child, for if thou beatest him with a rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with a rod, and shalt deliver his soul from hell. My son, if thine heart be wise, my heart will rejoice. Your father will rejoice if you are wise. Yea, my reins shall rejoice when my lips speak right things. Let not thine heart envy sinners, but be thou in the fear of the Lord all the day long. For surely there is an end, and thine expectation shall not be cut off. Hear thou, my son, and be wise. Perhaps I should add, just for you girls, in case you are wondering, hear thou, my daughters, for he's speaking to us all. Guide thine heart in the way of God. Be not among the winebibbers, among riotous eaters of flesh, for the drunkard and the glutton shall come to poverty, and drowsiness shall clothe a man which with rags. Hearken unto thy father that begat thee, and despise not thy mother when she is old. Buy the truth, and sell it not, also wisdom and instruction and understanding. Seek for these things. Look for truth within the scriptures. Ask God for wisdom. Seek instruction wherever you can. And I might add, godly instruction. There's all sorts of instruction out there on the streets. And this is not what our Lord is talking about. The father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice, and he that begetteth a wise child shall have joy of him. Thy father and thy mother shall be glad, and she that bare thee shall rejoice. My son, give me thine heart, and let thine eyes observe my ways. And I pray that as you look at my ways, that they will be good. But when you see a fault, come and gently point it out, that I might right it, that I might let you know that I'm ashamed, and that I would that it had been different. You can also turn to Proverbs 29, which I shall not, and it tells you there the same thing in the 15th verse, if you would wish to read it. But rather than read that, I wish to read you one last example here. And it comes from Luke. And it comes from the 3rd chapter, I believe, if my markers are right this time. And I wish to read you Well, and so the 3rd chapter, let's back up to the 2nd. And we'll start with the 42nd verse there. And when he was 12 years old, speaking of Christ, they, his parents, went up to Jerusalem after the custom of the feast. They still observed the law of Moses. And when they had fulfilled the days, as they returned, the child Jesus tarried behind in Jerusalem. And Joseph and his Mary knew not of it. But they, supposing he to have been in the company, went a day's journey, and they sought him among their kinfolk and acquaintance. Can you imagine their frustration? 12 years they have raised you, and suddenly you're not there, and they don't know where you're at. And they feel greatly responsible for you. It says, and when they found him not, they turned back again to Jerusalem seeking him. And I can only imagine how they must have run down the highway till they were breathless. And it came to pass that after 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing them and asking them questions. And all that heard him were astonished at all his understanding and answers. This sounds great, man. I'm having a good time. I'm teaching the doctors something. And when they saw him, they were amazed. And his mother said unto him, can't you just see his mother grabbing him and shaking him? Son, why hast thou thus dealt with us? Behold, thy father and I have sought thee sorrowing. And he said unto them, and I can just hear a 12-year-old boy talking this way, how is it that ye sought me? Wist ye not that I must be about my father's business? You know, I got something to do. And they understood not the saying which he spake unto them, and he went down with them, and came to Nazareth, and was subject unto them. But his mother kept all these things in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature, in favor with God and man. Jesus was subject to his father and his mother, even though he had a job to do for his Father in heaven. Perhaps his parents, you know, if that was me and I had found my son after 3 days, he would not have sat down, I guarantee you, for a week. But here, Mary gives us an example. She only scolded him. She accepted his answer and cherished it in her heart. But even so, Christ went with them and was subject to his parents. He learned from his father, no doubt, the trade of carpentry. And I am sure, without one shadow of a doubt, that his mother and his father taught him all that you find here in the Old Testament. All of those thou shalt nots, all of those thou shalt, and he knew them by heart. And as he grew in wisdom, as it says here, he undoubtedly understood them far better than I. I hope that each one of you, even though I have held you late, and I did not intend to do that, I thought surely this would only take 10 or 15 minutes to tell you. Will not go home feeling that I am critical of the way that you raise your children. But I do have a concern, and it's not only for your children, but for mine as well. For consistently I hear parents who are concerned because our children are not respectful to other adults. That they will do things that they know better than to do. That they will not accept correction. Children, this is not wisdom. Accept correction where it cometh. For all these people out here are your friends, and they love you dearly. And they desire to see you to walk in that straight and narrow way that leads to life eternal. Learn from your parents. Accept their criticism. Read your scriptures daily and become strong in the Lord. Thank you.